Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. This is Dave Custy, and you're listening to Baltimore and the Global Market, the show that seeks to develop a business plan for Baltimore companies to expand and succeed worldwide. Today, my guest is Dr. Rob Sabani. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio, Rob.
Good morning, Dave. Thank you very much.
Rob Sabani is chairman and CEO of Caspian Group Holdings. Caspian Group, a multidisciplinary group of companies with international business interests in the fields of energy, including renewable sources, infrastructure development, high technology, and publishing. He leads a management team that provides multinationals, sovereign governments, as well as technology startups with strategic partnerships and tailor-made counsel. A prolific author, Dr. Sabani has published 3 books and regularly contributes articles and opinion pieces on global energy and international issues in leading news publications worldwide. He's a frequent commentator on international television networks and radio programs. Rob was born in Kansas, attended high school at Tehran International School, spent years in the Middle East and the former Soviet Union, and speaks 3 languages. His experiences have earned him a uniquely global perspective, which makes him highly sought by both the private and public sectors. During the past 2 decades, Rob has provided strategic counsel to American energy companies on a series of global initiatives in the field of energy security. Rob sits on the board of C5I Corporation, is a member of the Bipartisan Committee on the Present Danger, and is recognized for his tireless advocacy of freedom and democracy for Iran for over 30 years. He resides in Maryland with his wife and children. That's the official bio, Rob, but give us some personal background and how you started the business and how did you make it international?
Partly by accident. I was giving a lecture in the former Soviet Union on U.S. foreign policy. This was right before the collapse of the Soviet Union, and I was invited to go to give a lecture at the Azerbaijan Academy of Sciences, after which I was then ushered in to meet with the president of the country at the time. And he asked me a few questions about oil, and he was about to sign a deal with British Petroleum. And he asked me my opinion, and I strongly opposed that approach. And I suggested to him that the Soviet Union is about to collapse. It's important for you, a small country, to have relations with the United States. And I strongly recommend that he work with American companies. And he did. He actually took my recommendation, stopped the deal with BP, and invited Amoco. Ironically, years later, BP bought Amoco. But that was my accidental entree into the world of political economy, into the world of energy, negotiating deals. And when I look back, I'm proud of the fact that I was the accidental guy who was able to open up the Caspian Sea basin, which is a very rich basin in hydrocarbons for the United States and United States interests.
So tell us how it progressed from there.
Basically, American companies approached me. I spoke the language. I knew the culture. So they asked me to advise them on how best to craft a fair deal that would be fair to the Azerbaijanis, fair to them, that would last the test of time, which I did. And then also a pipeline, because as you look at the map, the Caspian Sea is landlocked. And so the idea of taking this oil out, you know, because at that time President Clinton had imposed sanctions on Iran. So we had to figure out a way to get that oil out of the landlocked Caspian. And that was where I had the privilege of meeting with President Clinton and his staff, and then later President Bush and his staff. And I must admit that both men were very, very eager, interested, and supportive of America's role in the region, and they were very supportive of industry. And so we were able to get that oil out of the Caspian Basin, and today, thanks to their vision and hard work by private sector, 1 million barrels of oil leaves the Caspian each day, some of which, I must say, gets refined at refineries here, you know, north of us in Philadelphia. So, there are instances where the private sector can work with the public sector, and it doesn't have to be antagonistic.
Well, that sounds like a good template for most businesses, really. Because my experience just recently, I just returned from living 10 years abroad in Northern Ireland, and there are places called quangos. I don't know if you have them over there. They're public/private enterprises who try to work together, and a lot of times it doesn't really work too well because they are pit against each other. But in on paper, it's a very good idea, and it's great to hear that it's actually worked off of paper with you.
Yes, it has. And, this is why I strongly feel that there are, in many instances, any one of our national problems, state problems, can be solved. We have a debate right now in our country about the XL pipeline. I was very engaged in building a pipeline from the landlocked Caspian through very, very environmentally sensitive territory to the Mediterranean. But we did it. But we did it with all stakeholders sitting around the table. Environmentalists were fully engaged, private industry fully engaged, and we built a pipeline underground using American engineering and Japanese pipe. We were able to do that. So there's no reason why there can't be solutions found to our problems. I think the biggest issue that we face today are unfortunately, loud voices on the extremes of both sides and labels, frankly, that make it very difficult to overcome. My own personal experience tells me that all our problems can be solved if people just put aside their egos, put aside their party labels, put aside their narrow self-interest, and work for a common good.
See, that's a very good point. I found that after 10 years abroad, I found that coming back here, it is a country of extremes, as you said, and egos and no solutions, really, it seems to be right now. And that's one of the purposes of my station, is to really dialogue with people from all sides and to make sure that everybody has a voice, but to find solutions and not just to be a naysayer. I don't want to be a naysayer at all, actually. But I want to find solutions, and that's what part of this program is right now, that I'd like to see Baltimore business advance. I've seen businesses go across water in Northern Ireland and in the UK and other places, and I want to see Baltimore. I think Baltimore has a rich heritage and currently has a rich business acumen that I think they could be quite successful.
No doubt. I mean, Baltimore is uniquely situated. We've got within the region a very, very advanced knowledge-based economy. But once again, I think that the leadership on both sides lack vision and are stuck in the old ways and can't find, therefore, solutions that would really boost Baltimore's stature. There's no reason why, Dave, Baltimore cannot be a shipbuilding mecca again. There's no reason why Baltimore can't be a destination for ship maintenance. You've traveled overseas. You know very well that countries are constantly looking for ways to transport goods across ocean. And that requires, tankers. Well, why not build them in Baltimore? It can be done. A few months ago, I had the opportunity to meet, unfortunately, sadly, with a group of steel workers in Baltimore who were being laid off because, the plant managers or the leadership there wasn't able to come up with a solution to bring in business. And so it's sad to see that we haven't been able to take advantage of Baltimore's unique location, skill sets, but it can be done.
That's another good point in terms of that. My experience overseas was similar to Bethlehem Steel and Sparrow's point, as their shipbuilding industry went down after They built the Titanic over there in Belfast, and it in the 1930s they had 30,000 people working in the shipbuilding industry. And when I got there in the early 2000s, there were 96 people working there. But what they did was they reorganized their thinking, and now they are doing repair work on oil rigs. So they outsource sometimes, but they are getting more people working over there, and it's not just been abandoned.
Absolutely. You look at a place like Aberdeen in Scotland, it's a hub and a mecca for, as you said, oil industry maintenance and operations. And, you know, there's no reason why Baltimore can't be a hub. But as I said, unfortunately, you know, our leadership is stuck in a particular way of doing business. And sadly, very few of them understand how international business works. And that's the tragedy. And it's really a tragedy for the people of Maryland, because, as you said, Dave, if you look at the flow of traffic, traffic moves every day from 270 corridor in Montgomery County towards Virginia. The Beltway 495 is going from Prince George's County into Virginia. Companies that want to relocate don't come to Maryland, they go to Virginia. Individuals that I personally know are moving from Maryland to Virginia. So unfortunately and sadly, the environment in Maryland also does not welcome a business the way our competitors are doing.
Which perfectly brings me to my first point, and how do we change that? How do we not, how do I put it? We don't want to just abandon the government. I mean, they're the ones who are making all the laws and making this happen. But how do private businesses and businesses like yours and other businesses who want to do international trade, how do they go about it and, I mean, go from A to Z instead of just A to B?
Well, I think it's a combination, Dave, of issues and factors that have to be resolved. As I said, first, the environment has to correct itself. You know, the regulations have to be less onerous. Tax base has to be less. Let's take an example. Imagine if you made Baltimore a tax-free zone, and businesses that resettled into Baltimore didn't pay taxes but had to create jobs. Well, you know, there'll be a lot of companies that would want to relocate to Baltimore and create jobs. And maybe this tax holiday then gets sunset. There's a sunset provision that after 5 years, then you start paying a certain amount of taxes. But that's a way to start. Make Baltimore a tax-free zone instead of unfortunately and sadly, a zone where people are moving out of the city. And businesses like, you know, at Sparrows Point and Bethlehem Steel are getting shut. And incidentally, this is not just in Baltimore. We see this throughout Maryland, whether it's on the eastern shore, whether it's on the western part of our state. Businesses are either shutting down or moving out.
Well, how do we address this? How do we reverse this situation? I mean, how does John Q. business owner do something about it? Do we all try to get together? Do we all see, I mean, about changing this?
I think it just seems
to be very frustrating if you're a businessman and you want to stay in your state, but you want to do international business, which everybody has to do now.
Yes. And so I think the business community in Maryland, whatever's left of them, needs to get together, put their labels aside, and pressure the governor, the next governor, the senators, the congressmen, the elected officials of Maryland, and present them with an ultimatum. That, listen, if you don't change, we're moving out because this is not the way to do business. Maryland is uniquely situated, as I said, to be a cluster. Because of our knowledge-based economy, a cluster for genetic engineering, a cluster for solar engineering, a cluster for cancer research. And yet, you know, our elected officials are too busy thinking about the next election, how to position themselves And unfortunately, the establishment in Baltimore just goes along with it. And it's sad, and it's a tragedy, and no one wins. So the business community has an opportunity, I think, to sit behind the table across from our elected officials and maybe those who want to be elected and say, listen, this is our plan. This is our blueprint for building Maryland, and let's get on with it.
Well, that's exactly what the show is all about. This is what I want to perpetuate, and I can do it on a weekly basis. So I hope to bring in a lot more people like-minded and who want to succeed in Baltimore and in Maryland and not have to move out if they want to go international because it's just too prohibitive for them. How can we start something like that?
Well,
and also, are you interested in starting something like that?
I invested my own time, money, and precious, resources to run for public office as an independent this past November. So I tried to do my share, but it was very clear, and it is very clear, that there is an inertia, there's an establishment that doesn't want to hear new ideas, does not welcome new ideas. But that doesn't mean that it cannot be done, Dave. So I would go back to the business community putting together, each person can chip in a small amount of money, and have a third party put together a blueprint for the renaissance of Maryland, for rebuilding Maryland, and let that blueprint be the foundation for the next governor to turn this state around, whoever that next governor is. Let it take this blueprint and present it to the senators and the congressmen and the various elected officials to the state, because you need a blueprint. And if we have a correct blueprint, that could be the way to start.
It sounds like a plan. I hope to keep that up and have more people involved. And it sounds like a good, almost kind of like having a lobbyist toward all this, toward the powers that be. Let's take a look at some of these ideas that you presented back in the Sun papers. You said that Maryland's economy is headed in the wrong direction. We can address this a little bit. Maryland should be booming, but just in terms of bullet points and what we need to change to make Maryland a good place for businesses to be, and B, for businesses to relocate here or to even partner here.
Well, as I said, let's start with the tax base. When I think it was General Dynamics was looking to relocate. They finally decided to relocate to Virginia. Well, imagine if General Dynamics picked up the paper and saw the headline that the city of Baltimore is now inviting corporations to come, and if you resettle your offices, your employees, and they live within the city of Baltimore, you don't have to pay taxes on your profits. That's job creation. That would employ 800 people and then the multiplier effect of that. That's A. B, if we had elected officials who understood how international business works, they would go out. And by the way, what I'm saying is not unique, Dave. President Clinton mentioned this just a few days ago, that we in America do a very poor job of commercial diplomacy. And he's absolutely right. We do a very poor job of commercial diplomacy. Our elected officials should, first of all, be able to speak a few languages to understand how the world works. There's $1 trillion of assets waiting to be parked. Well, let's go grab 1% of that $1 trillion and bring it to the city of Baltimore to do shipbuilding. So connecting Maryland's economy to the international economy, to assets that are looking to be parked, would be another way, Dave, to create growth in Maryland.
Okay, you say that going global is the key, and that we have highly ranked schools and universities, and we have a knowledge-based economy, but we need to establish more industrial hubs around nanotechnology, human genomics,
yes,
and cybersecurity and healthcare and cancer research. How do we go about something like that? Do we need all public money? Is there private sources that can help with that?
I mean, Dave, we're broke. We don't have the money. Whether it's at the local level, federal level, or state level, we don't have the money. So it has to be done by the private sector. We have to go and entice the sovereign wealth funds of Norway, Singapore, Abu Dhabi to come look at Maryland and entice them to invest in Maryland. The universities in Maryland, as you said, are a fantastic source and could be hubs for genomic research, for cancer research. Yet, at the same time, and this is another factor, we also have universities that are in trouble, especially our historically black colleges. Graduation rates are falling. Students cannot stay at these universities because the cost of tuition is high. And so we also need to address that issue as well. But the totality is, yes, we can go and bring the Singapore Sovereign Wealth Fund to invest in cluster for, let's just take genetic engineering. Bring it to Baltimore. That means computer scientists come to Baltimore. That means biologists, chemists, everyone comes in a cluster, settle in Baltimore, and whatever's created is shared with the world.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. Well, I was just thinking when you were saying my experience over in Belfast, they've been trying to get their corporation tax down to 12.5%, like the Republic of Ireland. UK has been kind of dragging their feet a bit, and it's understandable in terms of that there are other areas like Wales and Scotland who would seek the same thing. But part of that equation and getting businesses over there, and they have gotten American businesses over there for IT and not just call centers, but high-paying skilled jobs, is that there is a highly skilled labor force here. Besides the fact that, we need to give them tax breaks and other incentives, can you address that highly skilled labor force in terms of technology?
Well, we don't do a good job, Dave, not just in Maryland, but I believe in our country, at teaching K through 12 students the sciences, the engineering, the mathematics. We in Maryland are home to NASA. We are home to the National Security Agency. We have the FBI close by, DARPA close by. And the individuals that retire from these organizations could be an enormous human resource that could then be channeled to our education establishments so that if a child starts learning about math and get them excited about biology and chemistry, that's where those skills are cultivated. Yet, what we're doing, some businesses are doing with support from government is we keep saying, we don't know how to do that, so we need to bring that talent from overseas. Well, that's sad because that puts our children behind the eight ball. So we have the resources in Maryland right here in our backyard to start investing in our children so that we can teach them those skill sets and not have to constantly go overseas searching for that skill set. That's another enormous challenge that I think we can overcome, but it has to be overcome because when you look at the city of Baltimore, Dave, the last time I looked, general unemployment in Baltimore was over 10%, but unemployment among black youth was 40%. That young population needs to find a productive means of engagement. And that's where and why we need to invest in them and invest in the sciences and technology from early on.
I agree with that. I like the idea, and I've thought of it myself, about retired people to come back and do tutoring, and we need that skilled infrastructure. Like you said, it's outsourcing, getting people from other countries to come over here, but we have such a talent base here that we just really need to bring it to fruition. And that's a good point. And I just, I'm one of the things that I want to do here is my whole remit is a win-win situation. I want anybody who has any dealings with my radio station to feel that it's mutually beneficial. And a lot of things just cross over in terms of doing business, tourism, and the social issues. And I really would like to tie that in. I'm just starting out, so I'm still feeling my, you know, my infancy here. And I think those are really good ideas to do, but to really go from A to, you know, N, much less just Z, is going to be a hard trip. And we need to really put together some working plans that we can address, like a business plan. That's why I want to address this as a business plan, because a business plan is a living thing. You address it every 3 months, 6 months, and if it, we see what works and what doesn't work. Do you agree with some kind of policy like that?
Or absolutely.
Some kind of working?
Absolutely. That's why I suggested, Dave, a blueprint, a living document that goes through every sector of the city of Baltimore and the state of Maryland, tax policy, economic policy, education policy, but geared towards job creation, geared towards wealth. At the end of the day, we need to create jobs. The you can have the best tools and products, but those tools and products have to be in the hands of people who are creative, motivated, and are productive members. The way I see it, we can change Baltimore and make it into a pilot for a national apprenticeship program. Let's bring in those retired NSA folks, bring those retired NASA folks, bring those retired DARPA folks into the city of Baltimore, give them a tax holiday for 5 years. You don't pay taxes if you come to Baltimore, live in Baltimore, but let's build a national apprenticeship center for so that young kids, especially inner city kids, who have talent but the school system failed them, come into this apprenticeship program and learn a skill, whether it is building a robot or whether it is building a engine. But either way, bring them under one roof. And that could be a nice way to start this process.
It would be a skills incubator for science and technology and, you know, it could be for anything, really. But how would we go about in terms of financially supporting that? Would it be private organizations that would have an interest in terms of the outcomes? Or what would you think?
Yeah, I mean, you know, take Anderson Windows. They provide, you know, internships for young people to learn the skill of how to make a window, installing a window. Well, you don't have to go to 12 years of school or even get a college degree for that. But if we give the incentive to Anderson Windows to relocate in Baltimore and not have to pay taxes for 5 years, and then ask this this private entity to then start recruiting these young kids. Now they have a skilled workforce to go out there and build windows, install windows, and we've created a plus-plus for everyone involved.
Yeah, and they are involved in it too. So their stake is not just financial. They see that what they have done is helped somebody in a community, really. Get out of that. Go ahead. Sorry.
No. You're absolutely right. And so by the same token, bringing, we can build a ship in Baltimore. We have the, you know, we just need the iron ore to be imported. But we have the skills to do it. So let's. For example, and build quality ships, by the way. The country of Qatar is hosting the World Cup in 2022. They're thinking about basically the guests who are coming to Qatar to provide them with floating hotels. Well, let's build those floating hotels, quality, world-class, American-made floating hotels in the city of Baltimore. get the money from Qatar, go there, persuade them to give us a chance. Let's do one ship, and if we can deliver it on time, in quality, then the rest is history. And that's the way you create jobs.
Is there, not necessarily a template, but in terms of attracting international investment like that, is there a template or a way that you have done it to make it successful?
Yes, absolutely. I've done it both by bringing in money and also taking American talent and finding opportunities overseas. You know, President Obama has talked about renewable energy. You know, his approach is maybe one way. Republicans, on the other hand, criticize him. But, you know, maybe the way to do it is what I've suggested, which is let's take innovative American technology on solar, let's say, and then go find the markets in the Middle East and exports. Every $1 billion of exports creates around 7,000 direct jobs and 20,000 indirect jobs.
And there's also other streams with that, too. If other countries, other regions find that we are have such a great skill set that they might want to come in and relocate or even open up a shop here, to be simply like that. But I think there's a lot of different benefits that can happen if we just start something like that up.
Dave, I can guarantee you that if we put a nice business plan together and basically go to one of these sovereign wealth funds and ask for $1 billion to do, you know, genomics, we will get that money in short order.
Well, that's a good start.
You know,
thank you.
And,
yeah.
And start making Baltimore a mecca for various clusters, starting with genomics. But we can't forget, Dave, we also can't forget the fact that we do have an uphill battle. It is a challenge because, at least in the city of Baltimore itself, we have failed our young people, both from an education perspective and from a job perspective. And so, you know, while we're doing this on, you know, one hand, we need to address how do we help these kids? Because, you know, an unemployed young man or woman is not beneficial to society at all.
Yeah, that's very true. We have to include them in this process. We have to talk about apprenticeships. The apprenticeship has to be citywide. It has to be statewide because of just one thing, a basic simple thing, too, is to give kids some sort of hope, really, but also to really – they have interests. They do have interests. All kids do. And just to really bring that up. And to give them the skills with it. I mean, we should be doing that already, of course, but we should be doing it from early on to everybody who's interested in wanting to receive it. And in addition to that, I think what we should have community centers. That's one of the first things that always goes in budget cuts, because it is a place for kids to unwind and not to hang on the streets and to learn things. I think it seems to be that we waste so much money on what have you when you hear all these reports, and that if we could have just channeled that into something that's sustainable like that, then maybe we can get this a good foundation. What do you think?
No, absolutely. We have a lot of waste. Money goes to places where, you know, it could be channeled into education, for example. But it requires leadership, Dave. It requires someone who's willing to look into the camera, look into the television set, not be afraid of saying what needs to be said, whether it's politically incorrect or not. The fact is that we haven't had an honest discussion with the people of Maryland, with the people in Baltimore, but actually nationwide. You know, when was the last time you heard a politician say, "My fellow Americans, I've lied to you. We've lied to you. There's no money." You know, we need to have a more honest discussion. And that honesty should start with saying, okay, we've got a precious $1. let's not waste it here. Let's put it into educating the kids in Baltimore because they are the future. And as I said, and I think we both agree, an unemployed young man or woman is just simply not a good alternative. It'll be a drag for society.
That's right. And it should be anywhere from teaching them technology, those who aspire for that, or teaching them, like you say, shipbuilding or craft. You know, it's endless what could happen in terms of people, also people building their own businesses. I was just reading yesterday, it's happening in the UK, that between March and May of this year, 1.2 million women started their own business. And that is becoming, I mean, you don't have to have hundreds of thousands of venture capitalist money to do that. It's a tough going because, of course, it's a 24/7 thing. I know that. I'm starting my own myself. But there are so many, my point is that there's so many different streams in terms of what this training could, come out as.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And as you said, to teach a young man or woman how to weld, that would be the backbone of shipbuilding. That would be the backbone of building an engine. That would be the backbone of building the next electric car. That would be the backbone of building the next solar panel. So,
go ahead.
These are skills that, can be taught. Unfortunately, our precious resources are going into, areas that are simply not productive.
This is true, but our most precious resources, as we mentioned earlier, are people that have experience with this. They're retired people. If we can, the idea too that, not that every retired person is just sitting around or anything like that, but that also will, give people something more to do. Also, this is something that they're experienced at. They enjoy doing most of their lives, and to hand it down is just, a human nature to want to do that. I think that we have addressed some good points here. Would you agree to that in terms of starting?
Yes, I totally agree. And I think that if we were to summarize what we discussed, Dave, we come back to the absolute urgent need to do a blueprint for rebuilding Maryland. And I say, and I use the word rebuilding because we are not building. We are simply shuffling money around. And we are losing jobs, and this is not just you and I talking. I think Peter Franchot, the comptroller, mentioned this last year, that Maryland has lost 10,000 jobs. And that's probably a conservative figure. So we do need that blueprint, and we need it immediately.
So to get that, I hope to be an important cog in doing that, because I can bring people together as I'm talking with you now. Who have like-minded, who want to see success and who don't want to have to go through the red tape and want to get it done as soon as possible to really improve our economy and our way of life. And that's what I hope to achieve. And I think this has been a really good show. Is there anything else you'd like to address in this first show?
Thank you very much. I used to teach for 15 years at Georgetown. And one thing I used to tell my students is if you can come away with one theme, I'm a happy camper, and I think, Dave, we've come up with one good theme, which is we need a blueprint for rebuilding Maryland, and the private sector should get behind it and pitch in each, and I think we're on our way.
Well, I'm in your camp. I agree wholeheartedly, and I appreciate you coming on and talking really common sense, good sense, too. I mean, this should be what everybody's thinking. We really want to have a good economy, to have a good way of life in Baltimore and in Maryland for everyone. Everyone, wants to come and work hard and wants to make a better life for themselves. I'm not just being all touchy-feely here or anything like that, but this is just the basic tenets of being human, really.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you, Rob, and I hope you come back.
I will. You invite me. I'll be here, Dave, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That was Rob Sabani, and we were talking about making Baltimore global, actually, in terms of business. Coming up with a blueprint. That's what came out of this, which was terrific. Terrific idea. And I want to thank Dr. Rob Sabani. And this is Dave Custy. You're listening to Baltimore Internet Radio. And we'll be back with more shows after this. Thank you.